power of communities drives strategies and experiments in both marketing and sales. People get inspired by ideas, opinions, and experiences shared in a community and make them work uniquely for their needs. Many pick the type from there, go on to invent and sometimes reinvent ideologies. Welcome to the podcast, and you're listening to Aishwarya. With me today is a man who challenged the status quo in the community, went on to create a category in the market, and finally co-founded a one-of-a-kind company. Let's welcome Sangram. Sangram is the chief evangelist and co-founder of Terminus, also a three-time CMO and a podcaster. Welcome to the show, Sangram.
Thank you, Ashwara. Happy to be here.
Let's start today's show with the interesting story behind your entrepreneurial venture and the whole category creation for Terminus. So what were your initial thoughts and ideas while starting the company?
Well, I just wanted to build something that that will be interesting enough and will pay the bills. I mean, quite honestly, like straight up, I never really thought about building a category as a thing or starting a community that has grown so much or starting a podcast or writing books. Like none of this was on my five-year plan or lifetime achievement list of things. But I think as you made the intro, I think it is really interesting to think through and go back the memory lane and recognize that almost everything that you do needs to be in the service of the community, in the service of the opportunity that you have and and the knowledge or the pain that you have. So one of the things that I share with everybody more so than anything as from an entrepreneur's perspective is do something that breaks your heart. Do something that forces you or keeps you up at night. That's when you know that there's a real thing that you're going to go through mountains and walls and whatever needs to be done to achieve and get there. So as long as you focus on something that you deeply care about, it's a problem that you have faced, it's a problem that you care, it's a problem that you will not stop talking about until it is addressed or at least in the process of addressing. That's something that I feel people should take note of, write it down. And if it comes back over and over again, then that's a gift for you to focus on.
Beautifully put. And I think it's like falling on to the tagline that says, do something that excites you. So, I mean, if it does not excite you and like drive you to do the best out of it, and then that is a calling for you. You should know that, hey, this is not something that's of my domain and it's not something that's going to like drive me enough to do the best there. So that's so true when you said it has to drive you, it has to put in that enthusiasm into you. And I loved how you stated how to trace back and connect the dots to find the picture. And I'm so glad to know that in case of Terminus, it started all with a community and went on to create an entire movement out of it and then came in a company. So I'm so glad to know you're doing what you love in terms of Terminus.
I appreciate you saying that. And I'll add to one thing you just said, you know, do something that excites you, right? I think it's a very fun thing to think about, but here's the reality. And I will counter that a little bit because when you do something, well, what's exciting to people is, oh, starting a company is exciting because you only hear the 1% of the people who actually somehow make it or look like they're making it. We look at some of the results out there in the world and we say, oh, wow, they're like, oh, look at so-and-so and they have done it. But we never hear, really rarely hear the 99% of the stories that are out in the world that are so challenging that the things that you go through, even in a success, there's nothing that I would say, oh, we started and we found a community and we built, we wrote books, we now have 1,000 customers. And none of this happened by just happening. Or things just came fell in place. All of this had about 100 problems, 100 micro decisions, 1,000 different routes that we could have taken, and somehow we ended up taking some of the right steps, most wrong, but some right, and led to this path. So I want to really emphasize the point that you made is, yeah, do something that excites you because that will keep you going, but don't get excited about somebody else's life and somebody else's vision and try to emulate that. Get excited about something that truly, truly means something to you. Like for me, it was, I love marketing. I've been a marketer, as you said, like three times I've been a CMO. And to me, I understand and feel the pain of a marketer. So tomorrow, if I go and try to build a company around, like, you know, plastic spoons, I will, you know, if it makes a lot of money, it's exciting to see that, but I will not fight as hard as I do because it's a problem that I have.
Yeah, certainly. I think it finally matters to what can you impact and what really is something that's most special to you and something that you understand things about rather than just getting excited as per somebody else's thought. And there's a lot of difference between motion and action, in fact. Like, you can keep thinking about it. You can just keep saying, hey, I know that is very exciting. I can go ahead and start a community. But actually starting a community is a whole story altogether. So thinking about a lot of things and preparing for it is like in motion. And actually getting onto the field and doing something in it and learning through that is the action, as you were stating. So, I get the clear picture. And I hope the listeners also understand that it's something that drives them personally and not really like a replication or, like, as you said, an emulation from somebody else's idea.
Exactly right.
So I'm a little intrigued to know more about this whole community part. So, you know, it's wonderful to see how something that started as a podcast, the Flick My Funnel podcast, has in fact turned into an entire B2B marketing community. And in terms of even creating a movement, which led to a category creation in the market. So was this an outcome of your passion? Like, did you always want to start a community?
Great question. Again, it takes me back to the memory lands, and I have to rewind myself and rethink and go walk through the steps there, which is always, it's like a therapy in some ways, because in those moments, you don't think about it, right? You don't wake up and go, I want to build a community today. Like that it doesn't work that way. It's a consistent act of doing something that somehow someday somebody says, oh my God, you now have a community and you didn't even realize that you did. Mm-hmm. That's the crux of that. So Flip My Funnel, for most people who know, and as you mentioned, it's a daily podcast. Even in the fact that it's daily, I only do once a week. The rest of the 4 days are from the community that people are running it. So it allows me the flexibility to do a lot more things. Otherwise, that's all I would be doing all day long. And that's part of it. One of the sayings that you probably know me, have heard me say, is that without a community, you're simply a commodity. And that's something that I've said that on the podcast every single day. And that's something that I think has led us to build this company as well. We build a community that led us to help build the product and allowed the community to give us a chance to build something that they would appreciate. And it's not perfect. It was never perfect. It will never be perfect. But it allowed the community to realize that we do truly care about the problem that we're trying to solve here. So the journey, just to give a quick thesis on that for people to recognize, is that when we started thinking about building a company, our Terminus, we realized that we are based in Atlanta. We didn't have a lot of funding, almost first, second time entrepreneur, so not a lot of experience. The odds of building something out of here was slim to none, going back to like less than 1% of the companies even hit $1 million in revenue, if that, over 4 or 5 years. So we realized that there's no way we can build a great product that would just blow people's mind based on what we know and what we think. But what we did know was this. We knew that there's a problem that exists that we deeply care about. So what we did was we brought in the top 50 marketing and sales leaders that felt about a similar problem and gave them a platform through events around Flip My Funnel and through podcasting, gave them voice and never asked them to pitch Terminus, never asked them to talk about Terminus, but gave them a platform to get their voices heard. And they appreciated so much that they started to talk about the problem. And before we knew, the media, the analysts were talking about the problem. We even invited up our competitors on our podcast, on our platform, as well as on our events to come and speak, all to do, which what we believed was to create an industry movement as opposed to a company movement, because a company movement might only have a few people attending it, but an industry event or industry movement includes these analysts, the media, and all the customers and future customers of whatever product or service you want to create. And that's the thesis that I have around that without a community, you're simply a commodity. If you believe in that motto, you realize that anybody can build a smarter, faster, cheaper, better product right down the road from you. So what differentiates you is not that product. What differentiates you are those loyal fans that care about you because you care about them first. And that's something very few companies, I feel, do today.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that fact. I like the way you split two things. One is creating a movement for the product and getting more voice for the product or the company as it is. And the other one is getting people to see what's happening in the industry and getting people to understand this is what is important in the sales and the marketing industry. And this is exactly what we need to care about. So I think the industry movement is what that powered so much contribution in terms of not just getting the brand being recognized, but sort of getting a feeling of belonging and sort of building relationships in the entire community. So that's really great to know that it perfectly worked out this way for Terminus.
That's a great word you just mentioned, belonging. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that's where my heart is. I think I recently did a presentation for a LeaderCast community, which was around redefining the leadership in the market. Mm-hmm. And what I started to redefine around that was it's really not leadership. Because leadership could mean so many different things. Everybody defines it differently, different models. Right. But it's really the word that you just used is the word that I've been trying to phrase around, which is it's belongship, not leadership. Right. Belongship means that I belong to some tribe. I belong to something and I long for the stuff that happens in that community. That is my tribe. And when
that's a wonderful word,
right?
I like it. Yeah, totally. I like it.
Yeah. So it's the beauty, and it doesn't have to be just externally. It really starts internally. You start with your family, and does your kids, your spouse, your neighbors around you? Do you feel like you belong in that community? If you don't, then you won't feel good about it. It'll start moving. Same thing with the company. Like do people in the company belong, feel like they belong? That's why people join certain companies, because they won't feel like, oh, I want to work at that company because I already feel like I belong to that company, to that team that I want to be part of. And same thing with customers, same things with future customers and communities. So I think this idea of belongship is mm-hmm. deeply rooted in creating a culture of trust, safety, and care. Like those are the three pillars that I feel connect all those, which is, can we create trust? Can we create a safe environment? And do we really care?
Yeah, you've summarized just in the best manner, I should say, because I also, as a person and somebody who's a marketer in the community spaces, I can really understand why belongingship, or you know, why to belong to something is actually what drives you and what makes you take an action, either in terms of, say, purchasing a product or even in terms of connecting with people. You connect with people the minute you see, like, I belong to this space and I know I'm going to take this particular step that's going to result in this action.
It does.
Right. So moving on to the section where we could talk a little bit about the book that you've authored. So your book, The Account-Based Marketing for Dummies, and that's, I should say, ABM has always been, and it's also one of the currently used buzzwords in the B2B marketing space. So on the same lines, if I had to ask you to simplify this whole concept of ABM for our listeners, how would you do it?
4 years ago, when I wrote this book, Account-Based Marketing, I initially thought it was a better mousetrap for getting net new customers and mm-hmm. have a better job of acquisition, the whole idea of flipping funnels. And then over a period of time, I realized and started to see our own customers and people in the community start to do more of the pipeline velocity oriented campaigns using the principles of Account-Based Marketing, which means you're now focused on a very few accounts and creating personalized experiences for them and turning more of those opportunities into customers. Thereby, your win rate is expanding, your target size, the deal size is expanding. So it's just really, really good for a business perspective. And then over the course of time, I also saw people using Account-Based Marketing principles for expansion and upselling, which I like to call observing your existing mm-hmm. customer base. So through their other products or services. So what was interesting to me is like, oh my God, account-based marketing, which really I thought was really to have just an efficient business model to get net new customers, has morphed itself. It's way bigger than I initially imagined, to be very honest. is way bigger than that to have pipeline velocity, expansion, retention, and all those different strategies. It's really a smarter go-to-market strategy. So when I talk to my publisher, it's like, well, let's call it a book that literally redefines, because I don't want to go down the history talking about ABM as one thing. I want to go down and say, well, this is where it's going. And honestly, to put it even further in the record here, is that I think 5 years from now, nobody's going to talk about ABM. Ashwarya, I think people are going to say, well, this is just a better marketing and sales strategy. So that's why I wrote the sequel to that, ABM is B2B.
It's interesting, Sandro, because the principles of ABM, as you stated, is what that drives the whole marketing. Because initially, when ABM was started, people started targeting those high-value accounts, or like picking certain specific accounts and doing a bit of targeting and personalization to it. But that's exactly what a business wants from all of their leads and forever the customers who come in after that. Because they all they want is growth. So I think the second book and the title that says ABM is B2B is absolutely befitting.
And I think in the book, you would notice that I put in like six different stories and introduced a new framework called the team framework, which I think people could literally write it down. This might be the one thing they will get value out of it. And if that's all they get, like I will be really happy if they can just remember this, which is, team, right? Target, engage, activate, measure, TEAM, target, engage, activate, measure. I say that because you use that as a framework. It doesn't even matter what product services you use. If you're a marketer or if you're a salesperson listening to this, and if you can figure out which companies I need to target, how do I want to engage with them on what, on their terms? Let's say they're on LinkedIn. Let's say they are people who engage with videos. Let's say they're on forums. Let's say they're on Brickmill, whatever it is, figure out the engagement strategy. Activate your sales team. If you're a B2B, if you're not activating your sales team, your marketing is going to be wasted. That's what happens almost in 99% of the companies. Marketers create a ton of content and nobody uses in their sales team.
Correct.
So activate is really important. And then measurement is really the idea of iterating and testing and figuring out what's working, what's not, and going in the process again. So it's not a funnel, really. It's more of a process, a framework of how marketing and sales can work together as one team.
It's exciting for me to think about how to align marketing and sales, because most of the times, as we spoke, the content is there with marketing and there is a process with respect to sales. But the sweet spot is where both of these could be combined together to achieve success in terms of more leads and more conversions and hence more revenue. So the team model, as you put it forth, is exciting.
Well, I hope people put that in use. I will love, people can hit me up directly on LinkedIn and tell me if that excited them, is that something they're going to do something from it, because I always love to hear and I love to engage on it and learn and grow together on that.
Totally. And another special mention for the word upselling, because I liked how it got turned from upselling to upselling. So a special mention for using that word.
On that, like, the reason that's important, words matter. Words, if you really think about it, words have the power of life and death. And the greatest movements in the world have ever been created, haven't been created through any crazy thing. It's actually came out of spoken word. So when we use words, we need to really think about it. So for example, observing really means that you're not trying to, selling is such a negative notion in a lot of people's mind, as if you're doing something bad. But if you think about, no, if you understand the pain point and if you can solve that, that person can get promoted, that person can get more job, person can be better off, that business can make more money. Like when you start thinking about it, you realize that you're actually doing, you're in service of them. And you would go at it differently. Another word, just on that word and that word thing, is like, I just never use the word prospect. You won't see that in anything I say because I stopped using it. Because let me ask you, Ashwarya, do you like to be prospected? Found out and whaled out of the water and fished out of the tank, like all these things that people use as part of their lingo, is just like really belittling the importance of what humanity is and people are. So I like to call, and if people are doing truly a canvas marketing instead, or even just basic marketing, is the future is going to be like, we need to call them either customers or future customers, period. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I think it's simple. And yeah. And in fact, the way I see it is that what you believe in is what you speak. So when you believe truly that you can invest in serving the specific customers, that's how upselling gets converted to upserving. Because you know that you want to invest in the potential of that person. You want to help them, you want to see them grow. And that's why you don't want to stop with making a sale, but you just want to go a step beyond and invest in what they're doing.
Absolutely. It matters a whole lot. And once we start using the right words, things change. Things, mm-hmm. People look at it differently. You will probably look at it differently, because I ask people this all the time, Ashwara. It's like, okay, well, how many emails do you send to your quote unquote, like future customers, as people call them, prospects? And they're, oh yeah, we send them nine emails, 3 cold calls, five, messages, to try to get them on a call, to try to sell them something. Okay, well, you clearly are harassing them. Okay. How many do you send to your customers? Oh, no. We only send them once a month newsletter. They're our customers. We need to respect that. And there lies the problem. Right? Part of the matter. Changes everything.
Totally. Agree with you enough on that. All right. Next is going to be a very, very specific question in terms of the takeaways that the listeners would probably be having through this particular podcast. You've got multiple roles and experiences in the marketing field, as we just spoke. Like, what would be your 3 top lessons or nuggets if asked for rapid product growth?
Oh, wow. I don't know if there are 3 or 4 I know. So I'll just keep going through my list of things that come to my mind. And I've seen that work so many times. Number one, I feel like consistency creates massive outcomes. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, do it consistently and don't try to measure it too quickly. Don't recognize it's a marathon. So if you consistently do something for a good period of time, maybe it's a podcast you do once a week or once, don't try to do it once a day just because, let's say, somebody like me is doing it. Do it when how often makes sense to you, but do it consistently for a great amount of time, and that will create massive outcome and following. So that's one. I think the growth happens as a result of that consistency, because you show up, people expect you to show up. And the second thing is that constraints breed creativity. So I think a lot of people think that, oh my God, like right now we are locked down, or we can't do certain things. I can't get promoted. My team doesn't allow me to do it. I don't have access to different tools. I don't have money. Like, all these different things can cloud our minds and say that, oh my God, I got so many constraints. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Constraints allows you to really dial in your creativity. The greatest businesses that came out of in the early days and even now in our own thing came from the constraints. We didn't have money to pour into the product, so we built a community that ended up funding the product and everything from it. So if we didn't have the constraint, we wouldn't have been able to build a 100,000 plus people community. It just wouldn't have happened. So it's a really interesting thing. Is like, look at your constraints as a gift, not as a problem. And because you asked three, so I'll give you a third one that's coming to my mind. It's like the bad messaging and bad marketing. It's like shoving a 20-pound of shit in 10-pound bag, right?
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. So don't overkill your messaging. Don't try to put stuff and try to be right. Try to be perfect. Try to be over-engineered in it, because it will be blah. At the end of the day. So when you shove 20 pound of stuff in 10 pound bag, whatever the outcome of that you can imagine is exactly what your customers feel when they see the messaging that you put out and what you put out there. So be very specific about whatever you do, and be clear and be consistent and be creative. I think it will create massive outcomes.
Yes, these 3 are definitely some important points that we as marketers, or for the fact anybody who's into the community and who's into the B2B space, can look out for. So as we're concluding today's session, I have a question that's a little bit tapping into your productivity part of the day. So, you know, you have a lot of work on your plate in terms of fostering communities, running a company, and even sustaining team culture. So you don multiple personalities on a day. How's it to have your plate full? Oh, wait, do you actually keep it partly empty for any reflection or learning?
Oh, a lot. I mean, that's a very important question. I'm glad you asked that. And I'll be the first one to say that I struggle with all of that, right?
The struggle is real.
Struggle is real. The challenges are real. The appetite to do more is real. As much as I would love to say that I try to pack up my day with like 20 pound stuff in a 10 pound bag every day and learn that, oh gosh, that's, I don't need to do that. So all of these, what we're talking about, is none of it is from like, oh, I got this. It's from a perspective that I know that works, but I myself failed to apply that advice several times. But when I do, I think it does really see miracles happening out of it. The part that, you know, when we talk about like, how do you balance it? I think I've now bestowed a few things for myself. So for example, like on a Friday evening after 7 p.m., I try to switch off my phone until church on Sunday. Mm-hmm. That's something that I've just done for the last couple of months, literally, and I've started to see a ton of benefit out of it. So the act of switching off and saying that I'm in control, not this phone is not in control of me, or technology is not in control of me, has been such a it's a thrill. It's almost like skydiving. If you really try doing that, like try it today, anybody who's listening, try switching off your phone for 1 hour, and you will feel like, oh my God, the world is happening. And the funny thing is, Ashura, the world doesn't revolve around me.
Yeah.
And that is a really humbling notion of the day.
Yeah, that's very true. You just take a step back and you actually see a whole wide universe in front of you, and you're like, oh wait, did I like overthink everything that I was thinking through? And then like you start realizing that it's okay to plug off.
It absolutely is. So whatever your version of what I do is, that allows you to unplug, restate, look up, kind of smile, relax, whatever it is, it is extremely important to do the best work of your life, if that matters. So it's interesting how it works out on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the way that I can see it from what you were explaining is making a conscious choice to either relax or take some time off and do whatever it is to mean reflecting or putting some time aside for what you want to do in terms of plugging off.
Very important. We, as an organization, for example, at Terminus, we do half day Fridays, recognizing that, you know, people are stressed, people have families, people have kids, people have all these things going on. They're in front of the computer all day. So we started doing half day Fridays and for summer, and we're like, oh, people are actually way more productive and happy. So let's continue to do for the rest of the year. If it works, we continue to do for all the time. So I think things like that, there's very conscious things that you could do for yourself. The conscious things you could do for your organization.
Very well put. Yeah. All right. So the next part is going to be very interesting and very rapid as well, because I've got three questions for you. And you have to give me like spot on answers. You just don't have to think. Just whatever comes through in your mind first off, you can just shoot it out.
All right.
Yeah. So the first question. What's the first app you use in the morning?
My Bible app. Well, I love the Word of God, and I think it humbles you. It kind of focuses what's important, recognizing that you, of all the apps that you could do, it allows you to really center your day. And to me, it's really important to recognize that.
Awesome. All right, the next one. So you're a podcaster. What's your biggest pet peeve?
Oh, when people say, tell me more about yourself.
Oh, yes, I can do a virtual high five from here to you.
Yep, it's very, instead, try this. Like, hey, what's your favorite movie? What's your, what did you eat for breakfast today? Or maybe say like, hey, if you anything that would get them like, hey, what was, which school did you go to? What was fun? Where were you born? Like whatever, they shouldn't, so you don't burn their calories, but get them in the mood of talking about that.
Get them easy into the flow and just have a conversation starting from there. Right.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So the last one, email or messages, what boosts your productivity and information sharing, be it team or person?
Yeah, like I think it's neither for me. Neither of them boost productivity for anything. Mm-hmm. I think my best productivity is actually blocking off every day. I block off an hour every day to just read, observe, learn, think. And I think there's a lot of importance to that. I think 99% of the marketers out there don't spend time thinking about the problem or reading enough about what's going on in the marketplace and learning about it, testing a certain thing. So I try to block off every day on my calendar. It's a calendar block, and I move it around depending upon if there are meetings or stuff, but at least 1 hour a day, all I do is like learn. That's it.
So thank you very much, Sangram. I think today's conversation has been really interesting personally for me as well, in terms of, you know, discussing about what values does community provides and what's all about marketing in terms of the B2B space. How is it evolving? What's the attitudinal shift that we as B2B people need to have in mind? Even touching upon a bit of mental health in terms of plugging off and taking time for yourself and exploring the better depths. So thank you very much for getting on the show with me. And I hope the listeners today have wonderful takeaways in terms of the lessons that you've stated, and even in terms of the candid experiences that you share for kickstarting a company or fostering an entire community or a movement.
Ashura, it was a pleasure being here. And to anybody listening, like, I would love engagement. So I'm not on a ton of platforms. I'm on LinkedIn. So if there is something that struck with you that you said, you know what, that's interesting, I'm going to take that up, or there was one thing that mattered to you, I like to know. Hit me up. Love it. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.